You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
Guys, why are you trying to break up homes, Megan? That was a joke, Wena. I've got a common law husband giving me numbers here with people with lovely voices. Can pass it on to Clunty. Are you still single, Wena? I never know what's going on in my friend's life here. He's married to work. Good one. If you have any questions about the recession, I've been confused by it. Now's your chance. We've got Nascent Advisors Clunty Pye with us all the way until noon. Give us a call on 011-883-0702 in Johannesburg and in Cape Town on 021-446-0567. Clunty, I'm going to start with the basic questions before you get provocative about the causes of the recession. And I want to ask you what I was asking you on Facebook so we can just unravel it slowly. What is a recession other than bad news?
Well, I suppose there is a just simple English word. I think it's some people with hairlines will respond to this. So receding. So it's really where we see growth is actually slowing down, of the economy, economic activity stalling, different kinds of things. But really, it has to indicate that economic activity is slowing down, and we are starting to get into some bad times. Now, what people have been going on about is a technical recession, and I think that's more for those people who are quite finicky about things. You know, when somebody's being technical, you know, and then they say, but give it to me in more technical terms. And then they'll say, well, you need two quarters of contraction in the economy. And then you'll say you have a recession. But generally, you should be able to even read things like, you know, when we are seeing our production, for example, which is one part, obviously, of economic activity, slowing down or receding, then you say we are actually in a recession.
Okay, I'm going to ask you some dumb questions here, right? Because I want to understand the technicalities so I can sound clever when you're not around at dinner. So a contraction, does that just mean you grew less than last quarter? Well, we're now talking negative growth.
A contraction is negative growth. So negative, you move growth, backwards. Right? Yeah, it's become, now the economy is becoming smaller, which is exactly what you now are facing. Because actually, when you actually say, this is what we produced, and then we produce less, which means actually your economy is becoming smaller. And this is what we're discussing.
So if that happens for three quarters in a row or more, we will stop using this qualifier, technical.
No, and we actually then become, because also part of it is that, you know, a recession is more short term, whereas you actually, if it gets more than this, then we are getting into something called a depression.
Okay.
Because suddenly now it's much more
serious.
I thought
that only happened in the 1920s in the history books in America.
Yeah, no, it's when it's more long term, it's more sustained, then we talk about a depression.
So the use of technical, which is maybe us BA students who are the media reporters for the most part, the use of this technical thing, we must just forget about it.
We should really forget about it.
It's a distraction.
It's a distraction because actually it's just people who want to be technical about it.
Okay.
Whereas actually we have a problem. Look, part of it is this, and I think a lot of people forget that we measure things so that we can actually attend to them. So part of STESSA really is to give us these numbers so that we can say, look, we are looking at the numbers and they are telling us something, and therefore we need to attend to a problem, and we give it a name. So when we talk about unemployment, there's a particular definition around unemployment. But the point is so that we know what we are dealing with so that we can solve it. So that's why, for example, unemployment will take out people who are no longer looking for jobs.
Yeah.
Because that's no longer part of a problem we can actually take care of at this time. So then you say unemployment is defined as this so that actually our interventions drive towards that problem.
Fair enough.
And
I think
this is the thing about recession, is that we are actually must focus on what the problem is and solve that rather than actually being technical about
it. Okay. So now let's get closer to the problem, which is the most important conversation to have, presumably. But before we get to the heart of it, I've got another very silly Ecos 101 question. Everyone seems to be surprised that we're now in a recession. And I'm thinking, but we've been saying this country is not growing more than 1%. We've been hovering between 0 and 1 for a long time. And I'm surprised by the surprise. Are you surprised by the surprise? Why are we surprised?
I'm surprised by the surprise because actually that's exactly it. You know, there's been this thing that we're not growing, actually is slowing down. People knew that we're slowing down. And that actually we looked also at the environment and we had no reason to say that actually things are picking up. And so actually because things were sort of worsening, especially in the political environment and especially in terms of people's attitudes or what people are calling, you know, consumer and business confidence, that things were deteriorating. So we only had one direction to go. So I'm surprised that people are surprised because that should have been the thing that we knew was going to happen. Now we should be saying, well, actually, this is what we are actually getting. And I think in part, also people have been telling us their conditions. So what we are getting now is a report in numbers terms of what people have been reporting in terms of their experiences, whether they are losing jobs, they are not. We are actually watching the news telling us that certain companies are shutting down production, mines are selling off, you know, things like that, so that companies are not reporting as good profits. So this is stuff that has been in the public domain. And now CCSA is just sort of saying, okay, guys, here are the numbers, because the point, of course, is not that we just live on anecdotes, but actually we get real good numbers.
Okay, now I'm ready to move from lower grade to a standard grade question. Can we now talk economics? When economies contract, let alone doing so for two or three consecutive quarters, why does that happen?
So,
and more specifically, why did it happen in our case? Are we just lazy? Are we not working hard enough?
Yeah. Look, certainly when they contract, remember we talk about economies. When we talk about economy, when we say an economy, we talk about people's activities, production. And I think this is one of the parts that has been quite frustrating over time, is that we like to talk about the economy must grow so we can actually create jobs. The discussion we should have been having is that people must be actively doing things, or should be producing. Then the economy will grow. Because remember, economic growth is actually a measure rather than an outcome. So basically, we use this number to say, when we have 3%, when we have 5%, we are actually measuring people's activity, economic activity, whether it's in companies and their own small businesses, in farms, and you know, in firms, all of that. So then that number is what tells us that people are doing more and more and more. So we're producing more cars when we are actually growing. And our discussion has been, well, actually, we should be growing, then we can now employ people. It's actually the wrong way of thinking about it. And that's why I think we are still stuck here, because we're using old trickle-down economics. That is, if we are 5% suddenly, that will trickle down to the men on the street to getting a job. That's old economics. New economics tells us that it's about participation of people. It's about inclusion. Then you can grow. And I would like to suggest that part of it is to take the 20 million or so people who are actually outside of economic activity and training and put them to work and see if you're not going to get that 5%.
Okay. Now, for me, the really fascinating thing is to try and understand who should be getting the blame for how sluggish the economy is. And years in and year out, you guys, unnecessarily technical language, talk about what happens in the rest of the universe, or if you want to be pretentious, exogenous factors, and what are we doing that's within our control, endogenous factors. If you're a politician, you always try to center the exogenous factor, because you've got no control over Donald Trump or what happens in China. And if you are hating on the government of the day, you will say it's all got to do with political risk and all sorts of things driving away foreign direct investment, and therefore you have low opportunities for people to be productive, even if they were committed to work harder. There's just no one starting up new factories, for example. How do you see it?
Look, there is no, there is, of course, merit to this exogenous thing that the world is not doing very well. But it's a small part of our discussion, because in the world, you actually create your own luck. We should be able to say that in South Africa, we want to grow domestically. So we make sure that we are doing the right things in South Africa to get South Africans working. And then if we're talking about export environment or investment environment, it's about actually going out there and finding those areas where we can sell our goods and services. Any business person knows that if the one client is not doing very well, what you do is to go and find another client that actually is doing better, that can actually buy that service. It's not as simple as that, but certainly that's what you try and do. We've taken too long on the conversation around, well, it's a bad environment outside there. But also, we are in an opportune position, because actually, in a big, big sense, people are interested in emerging markets like South Africa to bring in their money. What is our problem is that, are we actually a place that's exciting enough and trustworthy enough? And one of the biggest things, and I want to give a simple example. If, and you talk about this to people all the time, if you think about building a house in this environment that we are watching, would you actually build one? If you are worried about downgrades, if you are worried about whether or not what's going to happen in politics at the end of the year, if you're worried about a whole lot of things, no, you'd hold back. But it is actually building houses that gives us growth, that gets people working. Because once you start building that house, you will hire a contractor. That contractor takes the money and they go and buy the materials, which means that's another job. The person who sells materials is giving money to their kids, they're educating their kids, and we are creating activity. What is happening now is that people are holding back. And that's much, that problem actually resides within our control.
Is that what you meant on WhatsApp? Don't worry, I'm not going to say the things that are only between you and me. When you were cheekily referring to W MC, because often when politicians push back against private enterprise in this country telling it the regulatory environment is not great for business, there are too many hurdles, there's so much risk as well, the headquarters in London are telling us to scale back or go into the rest of the continent. And then some politicians say, no, but you guys are not even investing locally. Can South African big business do more while we wait for Jacob Zuma to fall?
And actually, this big business must actually absolutely do more. Part of our problem is that we have to take the risks. And there's been a very long time where actually there is this thing about government is too involved in the economy. That's one part of the conversation. And then there's also the, well, government must first do these things and then we will do that other thing. So we've got to pick a discussion, or we've got to at least find middle ground where actually government is being forced to do the right things in the economy, but also that business is taking the necessary risks. Also because business must...
But can I push you on that?
Yeah.
Why should the risk calculus of a South African-born businessman who happens to have the surname Visser be different to what it would be if their surname was, I don't know, McEnroe in America? Particularly when they know even more of the risks than someone overseas. If you and I are in a teleconference with investors in New York, we can hoodwink them into thinking that the political risk in South Africa is not as bad as the New York Times says it is. If you are Meneer Visser, you are profoundly aware how precarious our democracy is, and so it doesn't make business sense to be patriotic because a left-wing economist tells you you need to invest local.
Yes, no. So that's certainly not the point I'm making, that actually people should sort of put their money into risk just because they're South African. No, I'm saying because actually that is what's necessary if we are actually to grow and take advantage of opportunities and also prepare for the future as the tide is going to turn. I mean, all cycles come and go. And certainly part of it is if we all wait and do nothing, actually we're going to face more deterioration. And I think the risk there is that the base of the economy starts to thin, and okay, that it will take us longer to turn around.
So it makes business sense rather than patriotic sense.
Yes, absolutely.
To invest locally if you are local. Yeah.
And I wouldn't think that actually you want to be a patriot with him. And I don't think it makes sense for any person to do such a thing.
So we're not appealing yet to ethics. We're appealing to maximizing value growing the economy. Okay, if you've got a quick question for Klanti, besides all the lovey-dovey tweets, people enjoying what you're saying on Twitter, 011-883-0702, squeeze it in. We've got 10 more minutes with him. Some great public education here for novices like myself on the economy. And in Cape Town on 021-446-0567. Here's one from my favorite bleeding heart progressive friend Bandile, wants to know, Shame, whether this thing of ekhasi economy, whether that might be an unexplored avenue for trying to help grow the economy. And I've got a technical question in addition to that.
Okay.
Before you answer whether there is growth to be unlocked there, is the size of our economy undercounted because of what happens outside the formal economy?
In some parts it is. So, and I think it is in what the size of the economy, I suppose, is we survey these things, right? And we typically go to certain places. And that actually, because we are not expanding it and there are certain areas that have not been touched, are probably not big enough to be counted, so that the government actually wouldn't do it. We don't go to everywhere. And that's why, for example, economies like Nigeria, for example, suddenly become bigger because suddenly they think, well, actually, look at this. We can now pay attention to that sector because it's actually getting more and more attention. And that does go to what so-called township economies. It really, again, my point I was saying at the beginning, is about, are we unlocking potential in the people within townships? So that is what that economy is. It is the people who are there. Are they being actually brought in into, for example, technology, putting up the Wi-Fi streams, using, all sorts of other services that they can use, that can be done or brought into those areas, so that actually there's a lot of opportunity there, doing things that haven't been done before, things that actually only reside in center. Why don't we move those systems there and those services there? And I think a lot of that has to happen. We talk about, for example, special inequality, that the big things only happen in the big cities. We have to actually move closer to people and allow them to create value and to participate in the economy, and that they are the economy, that they actually don't keep coming to the economy as if actually the economy is something outside of them.
Hello, Michael. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
What do you want to say?
I wanted to just put a question.
Yes.
That the business community, world over, it doesn't matter whether it's South Africa or anywhere else in the world, they're incredibly fickle. As soon as they realize that their problems they don't invest. And in South Africa, what we're seeing today, and it might be a talking point, is that businesses aren't even investing in themselves at all, and especially small business. They're sitting on billions of rands in banks and invested elsewhere rather than their own businesses. And I think it's indicative of what's going wrong in our system. I don't know if you want to speak on that.
Okay. They tend to be fickle. But they also love money and maximizing shareholder value.
Exactly. And we are seeing investors actually investing in places like the DRC South Sudan. So there is opportunity, and very much businesses do go sometimes to war zones. So it is not as if actually, you know, we are the worst risk that is possible in the different geographies.
So at a strategic level, if we look at the macro economy, are we looking at the right industries for where we might actually extract more value or new value? And what I mean by that is, I don't know what sells in the global economy currently, whether we're talking financial services, whether we're talking technology, but we seem to be talking about things that we talked about in the 1980s as kids before the world changed, like agriculture, for example, manufacturing, for example. And occasionally, before I get bored with the financial detail, which is why it's your beat, I often wonder to myself, are we actually taking advantage of and placing ourselves at the center also of new sectors of the global economy? We keep hoping that things like farming and mining is where the action must remain in terms of getting us out of this rut.
It's almost like you've been reading from my leaf, and this is what we've been telling our clients who are actually, you know, we have a client that is in fundraising, and one of their approaches was, we're struggling to convince investors about South Africa because we're not growing. But the truth of the matter is, and I use the word strategy, that we have to be a little bit more strategic. One of the things is that we've got the macroeconomy, but we've got industries, and within industries, more work that's happening. An example is that some industries have been doing very well over a period of time, and the question there is to look and locate those and say, well, how do we support those to continue to work? Mm-hmm. Then some who've been doing very badly, to intervene there and say, how do we intervene in a way to make sure that these things actually work? So agriculture is a great spot, but there are certain parts of the agriculture landscape that could even be doing better. I mean, we are in a world now that is very big on renewables, on different kinds of sources of energy, where actually international investors are looking to get into South African agriculture and source raw materials to go home and use paste in terms of renewables, so people can invest there. What do we do then to make sure that we bring in people there to make the right kind of infrastructure, make it more attractive? Mm. We can do sort of, and then also take it further and say some of those crops can be actually be part of our manufacturing sector in terms of what we've been talking about, agro-processing. Again, bring in more people, package, do different kinds of things. Look into the energy sector. Again, lots of opportunities. Construction, different kinds of things. When you even think about construction that government is supposed to be doing for schools and hospitals and all of those things. So there's a part of it that we haven't done strategically, to look at the different sectors and have a strategy and a plan for each sector. And then within those sectors, there are sub-sectors. Whereas a big sector might not work like mining, but because there's quarrying in mining, where people are now still building houses, people are building. I mean, you walk around our CBD here in Joburg, in Sandton, and you see people are still building. Absolutely. Where is that material coming from? So there's all of those opportunities.
Let's squeeze in a final question. Keep it short, kindly, Aubrey.
Hi, Eusebius. Just a quick question. I think you might just have covered a little bit of what I wanted to ask. But I wanted to ask your guest, you know, which industries are sort of the low-hanging fruit that could be focused on at the moment so that we can get out of the situation as quickly as possible? So,
very, very good question there. Klanti, 30 seconds. Which is the lowest hanging fruit besides getting rid of the Guptas?
I've talked about manufacturing. I mean, one of the big manufacturing is a big area. Agriculture is a big area, depending on what you're looking at. But also tourism. I think it is still such a good picking. But we haven't done the work that requires actually people to be able to participate in that area. I mean, even building small roads that go to places where tourists are so keen on South Africa, but they cannot access it. Why haven't we been able to that? If you go to the Western Cape, for example, you go to these literary festivals, you travel in these small roads and you find these small towns. Those are centers of growth where people actually are doing things within their own environments. Government has to just go in there and put in the infrastructure and then let the people take over from there, so that they actually, and you hear a lot of people who want to bring in clients having to hire big helicopters. It makes it more expensive. Mm. Whereas actually if there were, you know, roads there and tourism buses and all of those things, we could be doing much better. And we're a cheap place to come visit.
Great stuff. That was Nascent Advisors Klanti Pai. Thank you so much for coming to the studio.
It's my pleasure.